Welcome to the Next Brave Thing podcast. My name is Ella Hooper, and I believe that breakthrough is on the other side of bravery. This podcast features brave stories, emotional health, and creativity to inspire you to take your next brave step. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another Next Brave Thing podcast. I'm your host, Ella Hooper, and I'm joined by one of our favorite, because I hear from you guys that you love this person, but I'm joined by Chantel Nelson. So thank you for coming back.
I feel like I'm part of the family.
You are a part of the Next Brave Thing family.
It's different being invited in as like a guest that nobody knows or like a just a distant family member. That feels different.
Yeah, I went over to your Instagram and I saw how many of like my family members and people now follow you, probably from coming on. You know how you can kind of see who follows that you know?
Yes.
And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. But you did your Next Brave Thing quite recently.
I did.
You launched a podcast.
I launched my podcast.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for you. And do you want to tell the audience about it so they can binge listen?
I love a good binge on a good podcast. It's called the Own It Podcast. And there are only 4 episodes up right now, but I launched it randomly on a Wednesday night because I had episodes up, just kind of getting them ready in the queue. And then people started messaging me saying, I love your podcast. And I was like, it's not live. So then just literally on Wednesday night, I just kind of crushed out the rest of the details that I needed to launch it. So it was very unplanned. I was planning on launching it, but not that night. So it's called the Own It Podcast. It's all about how to show up to your life by owning what's in front of you.
I love that. And on our last podcast, you actually shared a little bit about that on showing up.
Yeah.
And that was so powerful. And you have such great real life experiences. And so I listened to episode 1 and your voice is so soothing and beautiful. So great.
I get told that a lot. So.
Oh, I love that. Oh, it's so good. Well, today, guys, we are talking about what it means to be our true and authentic self. And it's something that is quite a buzzword on social media, wouldn't you say? Like, would it be in the last couple of years where people are like, I just want to be my true self or my authentic self?
Sometimes when I say it, though, I feel like, do people even know what this means?
Yeah.
Or is this like psychobabble that nobody really understands?
Yeah. And I think, like, for me, when I'm coaching someone, it's kind of become a bit of a core principle in, like, how I coach.
Yeah.
And so I love that we're doing this podcast today so it can actually, we can dig into what is this abstract thing called being your true self. And so how would you define it to be your true self?
I mean, another word for it would be identity, that I think is a really also popular way of talking about this topic. And I think true and authentic self is very in the psychology world. I don't know where specifically it stems from, but I know internal family systems, if you've ever heard of parts work and doing parts work, the self comes out of, what did I just say? Parts work. Internal family systems, which basically define the self as like the 8 C's, I think. And it's like when you're in your self energy, as they call it, you're curious, you're compassionate, you're connected, you're calm. What are some other good C words? I can't remember.
Creative, curious. We did talk about this in our last episode.
Did we? Okay.
Yeah.
Which and that's what they kind of use to describe the self. And I think I just like the words that you, because when you are in your true and authentic self, you do feel confident and calm and creative and compassionate. Whereas when you're trying to be somebody that you're not, you feel anxious, you feel like a fraud, you don't feel like you're kind of in an energy that feels like yourself. You're kind of just putting on a mask or trying to be what everybody else around you want to be. And it's really exhausting.
Yeah.
And so I think the self is, I used to hate it when people would say, just be yourself.
What does that
mean? I'd
be
like, what? Who am I?
Yeah.
I don't know who I am. Mm. And I think that the self has to be nurtured because as little kids, they don't they don't know how to define themselves. They just are who they are. And it's us as parents that kind of point things out and affirm things and let them know this is who you are, this is what I see in you. And you kind of pull that self that's already inside of them out, so that almost like a mirror, you're like holding up a mirror. And as they grow into adulthood, they don't need us as their parents to kind of do that in the same way. They're kind of growing that image of their self out in the world. But right now, like, my kids know who they are because of who I tell them to be and what I affirm in them. And so I think it's, we're going to unpack it a lot.
Yeah.
I think saying that the self is being yourself sounds a little redundant, but what do you think?
Well, especially when people have rejection around quote unquote being themselves, right? Like, it can be a really confusing thing. So that's why I love that we talk about the eight C's, and they're more like feelings and states of mind.
Right.
But even as you were talking, I was thinking about the tension that we live in as having sometimes an inflated sense of self, like an arrogant kind of sense of who we are, like a bit disconnected from reality.
Right.
And then also, which is disconnected from reality, a really low sense of self. And Kristen Neff, who's a researcher of self-compassion, she talks about how we live in such a self-esteem culture, which is more about the ego and about the car that you drive, the boyfriend, how much money you make, like that kind of, those kind of outside things validating like who you are.
Right.
I'm curious to know, like, what's the difference between like your ego and maybe your true authentic self?
I think authenticity.
Yeah.
Dr. Gabor Mate. Have you ever heard of him? He's in the drama space.
Amazing. Yeah.
And he talks about, we will always sacrifice our authenticity if our acceptance is at stake.
Yeah.
And we will be whoever we need to be, we'll shapeshift if it means that we'll be accepted. If us showing up authentically, whether that's big and loud and boisterous and just, or if it's small and timid, and if that gets criticized or rejected or pushed away, then we'll sacrifice our authentic self on the altar of acceptance.
Yeah.
And so we'll shut down those parts of ourself in order to be liked or in order to remain in right standing. And so, sorry, what was the question?
Well, just around like the ego, and I guess it's like you're kind of hitting on authenticity.
Right. I think the ego like is protective.
Yeah.
Right? It's protecting.
So yeah.
And it's the ego is trying to project something out into the world that is likable or desirable. And the ego is that thing that kind of jumps when we say something silly, or like, you know, when you're at the movie theater and they say, have a great movie, and you're like, you too. And then you walk away just like kind of feeling really embarrassed. Like, your ego is going to try and jump to your defense to try and, whether it's like you laugh about it with your friends, even if you feel really embarrassed about it, like your authentic self felt really embarrassed, but your ego is going to jump to your aid and just kind of make fun of yourself, maybe, or put yourself down in that moment. Like, that was so stupid. I can't believe I said that. So the ego is trying to protect your vulnerability, but your authentic self is who you are. And so I think it's like, I don't know, this is so nuanced and we can go so many different places with it, but I think there's always an opportunity to be authentic or to be protective. And I think sometimes life is going on a journey of figuring out what makes me me. And once you figure out what makes you you, am I going to be brave enough to show that to the world?
Yeah, I love that you're bringing up, and especially teenagers, people, you know, are teenagers, peer pressure comes up a lot, but peer pressure doesn't just end once being a teenager ends. So in your story, like, have you ever felt pressure to conform or to kind of abandon your authentic self?
Yeah. I mean, I think all growing up, what the popular image was a certain way. And if you didn't look like that, act like that, kind of hang around with people like that, then you weren't popular. And I remember popularity was something so desirable
when
I was younger. And for whatever reason or many reasons, I never fit in that group. Mm-hmm. And so I would always try and make myself look like that or act like that or be like that. And it's almost like you create this facade for yourself where you are all of these traits and attributes that define a popular person. You almost like embody those things. And then you're being somebody who you're not. Like a lot of my mid to late 20s and early 30s was me unraveling this mask or this facade that I had put on for so many years, thinking this is what I need to look like, act like, be like, hang around with in order to be accepted. Because like I said, we'll sacrifice authenticity for acceptance every single time. Mm. But my 20s and 30s was about learning that I had sacrificed who I really was so many times in order to be liked. And then I was in my late 20s and not knowing who I was. I had no idea who I was, what I liked. It's like that. Have you seen My Best Friend's Wedding with Julia Roberts?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And how she is so enmeshed with all of the boyfriends that she's with that she never knows what kind of eggs she likes. Mm-hmm. You remember that? Mm-hmm. And then whatever boyfriend she's with, she likes, if they like scrambled eggs, she likes scrambled eggs. If they like poached, she likes poached. And then she goes on this journey and then she figures out what kind of eggs she likes. And I think it's just such a good picture of kind of how a lot of us live our life, just trying to be who we think we need to be. But eventually it all comes back around. And when we realize the only way that I'm going to enjoy being in my life is if I'm being myself.
Yeah, exactly. And being like, but it's such a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think that like you hit on such a great point of vulnerability, because even though I like teach a class on it, but I notice in myself that I'm always trying to outsmart vulnerability. Like I don't really want to be vulnerable.
Right.
And it's really like such an ingredient to authenticity.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about that? Like how vulnerability plays a role in authenticity?
I feel like you would be a better expert at this than me.
Oh, I feel like you... I mean, maybe we could go back and forth.
The wholehearted teacher.
Oh, the whole heart. It is an ingredient for living wholehearted as well. Yeah.
I mean, I think in order to be yourself, you have to be known.
Mm.
And that is vulnerability. And the thing I always say about vulnerability is that vulnerability always costs you something.
Yeah.
And I think Brené Brown defines it as, what is emotional uncertainty?
Emotional exposure. Yeah. Uncertainty.
Risk. And emotional, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Uncertainty.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think as a teenager, all of those feel horrible. You don't want to be exposed. You don't want to be vulnerable. You don't want people to see the real you. If that real you doesn't measure up maybe to the standard of what it looks like to be popular or to fit in. But now I think the older that I get, the more that I just don't really, I'd rather be myself than be liked.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's still the choice every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to be myself or am I going to be liked in this moment? And I think I still have moments. I think specifically when I'm doing something new, that's when I have to face that. When I'm in my life and just the everyday, I'm like, I usually just am myself. But when it comes to having to step out or do the next brave thing or take another job or start a podcast, like I've even been feeling the last couple of days, just that emotional exposure and that risk and that vulnerability of, oh no, I'm sharing stories on my podcast and they're about people or about my life. And it just feels really, really vulnerable. And it makes me want to, I'm not going to do it, but it makes me want to shut it all down.
Yes.
And just kind of go back into hiding because it's just safer to be small and to not open myself up to that kind of exposure or risk or uncertainty, because it is uncertain, but it feels like what I'm supposed to do right now. And so I think you can't be authentic without being vulnerable. I think they're like,
they're cousins. So hand in hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I find even doing this podcast super vulnerable.
So vulnerable.
Like something that like I have walked through in being authentic. Like I think growing up in Australia, It's not like a Christian nation, yeah. whereas America, like, it's actually quite a Christian nation. Huh. And so what about Canada?
I think so, because the Queen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, but we have the Queen. Well, the King now.
The King. Oh, yeah.
I forget
the King. Yeah.
I forget that. Yeah, Commonwealth.
Yeah, because it's like church and state. And,
yeah.
But it's not very Christian.
Not, well, not really.
I don't
anyway, know. So it's really interesting, like, even having this podcast, because I also have, like, people who are not, have any religion or anything, like, listen to my podcast or, you know, that kind of thing. And I feel like there's been this wrestle in me of, like, I don't want to, like, be too Christian. Mm.
Yeah.
Because it's like some people have pain in that area, and I know that it can bring up church pain and religion pain and mm-hmm. all of that, and I've walked through my own version of that pain. But then I also don't want to pretend that this isn't such a huge part of my life.
Right.
And it's really been an interesting thing, because I think I have more of a block around it because there was more bullying or like nasty comments about faith growing up.
Right.
And so I noticed that that makes me almost like sometimes have a bit of a block in sharing
yeah.
who I am,
yeah.
even on the podcast. But then I've just decided it is what it is.
Yes.
And then the Christians come at you for being ashamed of the gospel,
yeah.
you know, so you don't win.
I mean, I think our experiences shape how we show up.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And we all have blocks and triggers and pain around different things that mm-hmm. are all of our own journey of how we push past those things or heal or process those things so that
yeah.
we can be our true and authentic self.
Yeah.
Because all of those experiences of pain or rejection or being made fun of or being told that that's silly or that's not real, again, we'll sacrifice authenticity for acceptance. And
yeah.
so we will, okay, I just don't talk about that anymore. Mm-hmm. Or I don't be as open or as expressive about my faith.
Mm.
Because when I did that, I got made fun of or I got rejected. And so that ego comes in and says, don't do that again.
Like, yes.
just be small. Don't talk about that. Don't be too much. And then we listen and then we realize, oh, but it doesn't really feel like I'm being myself. Like, in order
yeah.
for me to be my full, true and authentic self, I actually have to include that part of me.
Yeah.
And so I either have to, yeah, I have to heal from maybe the experiences or the narratives that I created in my mind because of those experiences. If I want to almost like, I kind of call it reclaim those parts of ourselves, because we kind of sacrifice these parts of ourselves along the way, whether it's being that really loud person or being the creative, expressive, stop and smell the flowers kid. And then we were always rushed and told, stop being so slow. And so then we just kind of stop being slow and we were just always rushed. But then we get into adulthood and realize I'm actually not who I authentically am. I'm just a combination of all these parts of that by myself that I thought that I had to be. And so I kind of teach clients to go back into our story and reclaim those parts of ourselves that we surrendered or let go of, or the enemy's job is to steal, kill, and destroy. And that's oftentimes what we have to go back in our stories and do, is reclaim those parts of ourselves that we let go of or
yeah.
he convinced us to give up. And so,
yeah, that's so powerful. Can you explain a bit more about parts therapy? I've experienced it and I know, for me, it's kind of been a way of me feeling the most whole, I would say, because I've worked, you know, with counselors that have helped me also reclaim parts of myself.
Right.
And so, I mean, I remember when I first started my podcast, we have a few podcasts that are on like the cutting room floor that we've never.
Oh, really?
Well, it was sort of my first
oh, me
one.
And you.
I, yeah.
Yes,
my first one that you and I did like years ago. And I remember you explaining like there's a part of me that's excited about this and then also
right.
a part of me that's scared. So, yeah, tell us a bit more about like the parts therapy.
Yeah, it was founded by a guy named Dick Schwartz. It's called Internal Family Systems. And I think a lot of us use this language, like even when you're talking about like part of me wants to go, but then there's another part of me that I just want to stay home and watch Netflix. And so it's this kind of idea that there's this is going to sound weird, but there's like this family of people living inside of us that
it's
all
really
have
real.
Different roles and parts to play. And so there's the there's the self, which is kind of what we are unpacking a little bit. But then there's the exiles. And the exiles are those parts of us that we feel really ashamed of. Maybe it's shame or guilt or just parts of ourselves that we have been deeply wounded or rejection or I don't know. I can't think of any right now. Yeah. But basically these exiled parts of us. And there's another set of parts called the managers. And the managers are kind of like the ego, how I described. Their job is to kind of put on the good face, not let those exiles out. Like when you say the have a good movie, you too. And then the exile feels like, oh my gosh, that was so embarrassing. And then the manager's job is to just kind of come and to the rescue of that part and kind of save face or laugh it off a little bit. And then there's the firefighters, and the firefighters' jobs is if that exile actually gets out. So if that shame or that embarrassment all of a sudden kind of spews out and I don't know why I would do this, but I cry because I feel embarrassed. Mm. The firefighters are there to kind of get rid of that as fast as possible, whether it's through like a coping mechanism, like drinking or kind of self-sabotaging, anything to kind of get that part back under control. And so this is like kind of the premise of parts work. I don't ascribe to it in fullness. I use like little bits and pieces of it because, I mean, as a Christian counselor, they kind of say that you keep all of these parts, and the goal is to kind of just welcome those parts. But I'm like, I don't want to keep shame around.
Right.
I'm like, shame doesn't get to stay. And so I use bits of it because I think it's just, we use this language where there's and when you dive into the deeper layers of what part of you wants to do that or what part of you is scared, and you can often find some deeper vulnerable emotions or stories underneath that part of you that's scared. And so I find it helpful with clients when we kind of do a little bit of parts work like that, where you're just kind of going back in the story and figuring out where you lost parts of yourself. I kind of do it more like that, where we let go of parts of ourselves, and whether that's the bigness of ourselves or the just loud parts of ourselves or the quiet. If we're called shy, we don't want to be called that, and we have to go back and reclaim. I'm actually not a big boisterous person. I'm more quiet and slow to engage. And that reclaiming those parts actually brings so much freedom, because then you get to take back what is rightfully yours and was yours to begin with. But somebody or some experience along the way convinced you to let that part of yourself go.
Yeah. It's so powerful though. Like I probably would say that parts therapy has been one of the most healing tools, I would say, because it's more about me learning how to listen to myself.
Yeah.
And I think like being authentic, sometimes I wouldn't even, like Julia Roberts, know what I like.
Right.
Or would like felt like I had to like something because it was the good girl thing to do,
right.
Like, or the right thing to do, but I would never be able to connect and actually listen to myself.
Yeah.
Because I think that often, because my coping probably, would my firefighters be people pleasing, or is that a manager?
I'd have to like dig into it a little bit more, because I kind of forget.
Yeah.
Firefighters are like the
oh, that's like
really
a
intense things that you do. Yeah. To kind of save face, I think.
Yeah.
You can Google this.
Yeah, yeah. Guys,
I don't want to be giving wrong information.
Google it. But I do think that like people pleasing, I would clock.
I think people pleasing would be a manager.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Like, because I would be clocking what other people need me to be instead of me actually being myself.
Yes.
Like I would say Brené Brown calls it a dirty yes, when I would say yes to something when I don't want to do it.
Right.
And I wouldn't ever stop and have a conversation with myself about like, why do you not want to do that?
Right.
What do you need? Like maybe put in a boundary or like create better expectations about what you can do. Or, you know, whereas like I'd go into what does that other person need? And I don't have any needs.
Right. Because what did that give you? Because that was a protector.
Yeah, well, it's control.
Yeah.
Of how they perceive me.
Right.
Whereas I'm not like thinking about how I perceive myself.
Right.
Like I've given them way too much authority to make, you know, to actually like say who I am.
Right.
Which is really like a common thing.
Right.
We value other people's opinion of us.
Right. And probably if you took it even deeper, it would probably be because of experiences where maybe you showed up like yourself and it wasn't welcomed. And
yes.
so you learned, oh, I actually have to like put on a good face and I have to be the good girl and I have to just be who people need me to be. Otherwise, I don't get what I need, which is love, connection.
Acceptance. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think acceptance would probably be a big one for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Acceptance for sure. So what are some ways we can start embracing our own authenticity and like really like start taking action in this area? Because it can feel really overwhelming of like recognizing, oh, I hide all the time or I'm self-preserving all the time,
right.
you know? So what are some actions to take to kind of ease into being authentic, do you think?
I think this kind of takes a deep level of self-awareness. I think self-awareness is step one of so many things.
Yeah.
If you don't know what it is that you're doing, then you're not going to actually be able to discover your authentic self because you're just hiding behind the coping mechanisms that have kind of kept you safe for so long. So I think kind of recognizing where you're not being yourself. And I think because what would it feel like to not be yourself? Like if you could remember like those years where you weren't being yourself, what did that feel like? Or how was that portrayed?
Yeah, I think there was like a lot of, I would call it privacy, but it was really self-protection. Like I would say even in my old workplace, like there was a sense of like, I can only show my business side of myself here, which I know there's some, of course you want to be professional, but then when I helped start BCA, there was like this sense of belonging, which helped me feel like I could just fully be myself.
Yeah.
But I think mine would look like, oh, I'm a private person.
Right.
Like I don't share much of my personal life.
Right.
Which now I have a podcast.
Right.
Share it at all.
Yeah. I think mine would just this feeling of being small and hiding.
Yeah.
And questioning what I said, how I showed up, why did I say
that?
Kind of just this like hypercritical, I mean, self-hatred kind of is what it was. Like, I just really didn't like myself and I questioned everything that I did. A big thing was not ever being able to make a decision.
Yeah.
Always needing somebody else
to
make the decision and asking other people's opinions or their thoughts or like, you just pick. I don't care. I don't care. And so I think a part of also just kind of embodying your true and authentic self comes with also building trust back with yourself, because we break a lot of trust with ourselves when we quiet ourselves down, when we say you can't actually be yourself, you have to be this instead. And it feels really just abrasive to ourself. And pretty soon ourself is just going to kind of, all right, we'll just take a back seat. And you almost have to like build trust with yourself again to let that self out.
Yeah.
Because it was a lot of just making yourself small, not letting yourself have a voice, not being honest. I think a lot of people who aren't their selves lie, and not in like a pathological way, but in like a, when you're asked how you're doing, I'm okay, when you're not.
Because
you're afraid of hurting somebody else, or you're afraid of disconnection, or you're afraid of just anything that would kind of rock the boat. And so self-awareness in how you show up and how you're engaging in your life, and then building back trust. I always tell clients, like, you're not going to start off tomorrow by like making these massive decisions about your future. Like it's going to be like when somebody asks you where you want to eat, you're going to make the decision. And that builds trust with you that, oh, I actually make good decisions. Because I think when we're not in our true and authentic self, there's this belief that we don't make good decisions and everybody else makes better decisions and I can't trust myself and I have to constantly seek approval and attention, because that's what we had to do growing up, maybe, in order to get, like you said, acceptance.
Yeah, that's such a great point. I mean, self-trust, man, that's such a journey to go on. But it really does build confidence. It's like you with putting out a podcast, me with putting out a podcast. Like, you can have critical voices from outside, but because we've had years of strengthening our sense of self,
yeah,
the critics definitely still trigger, but not in the same way, yeah. I would say, because we have an anchor to come back to.
Right.
And part of, and I know you probably work with clients with this as well, but a huge thing, especially living courageously, living brave, is the thing that will come up often is the imposter syndrome.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And that's such a hindrance to living authentically. What's been your journey with the imposter syndrome?
I'm rolling my eyes because I think anytime we step out and do something new, or we decide enough is enough, I'm going to be myself, all the voices come in of who do you think you are?
Yeah.
And sometimes those are real voices from real people, whether it's like I've had people online say things and people in real life say things, and it makes you feel, it doesn't make you feel shame, but you feel shame. Like there's mm-hmm. been so many times where I'm like, am I being too much? Are they right about those things? And I think you have to have a healthy level of self-awareness so that you can kind of take in that information accurately mm-hmm. and maybe there is a point there. Maybe, I don't mm-hmm. know. But I think shame will always make us want to hide.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I don't even know what the definition of imposter syndrome is, but I think it's just feeling like you're not, you shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Or you don't belong here, right?
Yeah. Well, I have many clients even in the industry, entertainment industry, but even like I can think of the medical field where they do so much study.
Mm.
But I think it's actually huge in the medical field because it's life and death.
Right.
Like if you make a mistake, it's someone's life. And so there can be this thing of like obsessing about studying so much so that you can outsmart like a variable or uncertainty or a mistake like that, which, so I get why imposter syndrome is big in people.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of even suicide around this because it's like this, because it's so high stakes for especially doctors.
Yeah.
But I think that, I think it's that feeling because something like I know sometimes even being an instructor, I'm like,
yes.
Oh, I haven't really prepared the best.
Yeah.
Like, or I could have
done that prepared so much, but you still know that you're not an expert and you're not going to know everything.
Yeah.
And somebody's going to ask a question that you don't know the answer to.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be like, do I belong here? Because I didn't know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
I'm qualified to be here.
Yeah. And I think because, well, sometimes like, it is important to get qualified and do all those things for sure, but that doesn't actually heal the pain of being an imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
Because I know people with so many degrees and like so much experience, but there's still something inside us that needs compassion and love. And I always ask myself, like, if in imposter syndrome, like, what am I hiding? What am I afraid people will find out? And that's what authenticity is. But I think sometimes we go in going like, well, I haven't really got a degree in that. I haven't done this. But just be honest.
I actually feel so like provoked right now because I have this dream to get a PhD in behavioral neuroscience.
Amazing.
And
which you should.
Which I should. And I've always wanted
if
to
you
get
want to.
One. But I was telling a friend at a pool party the other day about how like I just need to get this degree. I forget kind of what context I was talking in about it.
Yeah.
But it was basically like a PhD is the highest level of education that you can get. And I have experienced a lot of vulnerability in my credentials in this season.
Mm-hmm.
And so I almost feel this like push to get, like I've been looking up programs and she was like, what are you trying to prove? She's like, I feel like you're trying to get this degree so that you can prove to everybody that you're the smartest and you're the best and that you're meant to be there. And I was like, initially I was like, no, that's not what I, it's
totally.
Because I want to be able to enter rooms and spaces that other people can't enter into. But the more that I've thought about it, the more that I'm like, actually a big part of that is true.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when you're perceived as an expert in something, which I sometimes am because I have a master's degree, though that doesn't make me an expert in anything. Sometimes it almost feels
more
like
than me though, guys.
But almost it feels like there's like this assumed expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And it then that the gap between what people assume of me versus maybe how I can deliver that in there makes me feel like an imposter. And so then I have this thing where I'm like, if I get a PhD, then that means that I'll finally feel like I'm meant to be in this space. Yeah. And so even what you're sharing, I'm like, I just need to own where I am today and what I have. Mm. But I think it feels so vulnerable to even own our credentials and own our expertise and own our strengths and own just what it is that we do and how we show up in the world. Cause then it almost swings to, well, does it look like I'm being self-important or self-inflated or selfish?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think the line is between like, I don't know, having a healthy sense of self maybe and having an inflated sense of self? Ooh, I think you kind of mentioned it at the beginning. Like you said,
the ego.
The ego. I mean, it kind of goes to narcissism or like deep
self-hatred.
And,
well, actually both I think probably would be rooted in
rooted
self-hatred.
Rooted in deep self-hatred and insecurity. Yeah, they just have different expressions.
Well, I think that it's such a good question because even like the thought of you getting a PhD sounds actually really aligned with your true self.
Yeah.
So I love that you even say a part of me is also like, because you have been brave and you put yourself out there all the time.
Right.
Like, so there's going to be the vulnerability of that space that you want to protect of like, I have all these degrees, you know?
Right.
And so,
but then there's a part of me who is like, maybe I'm trying to do this so that I don't feel that imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Anymore. But I think that's just the beauty of your self-awareness of like figuring out the dance of it.
Right.
Like, and I think this is so human and normal because I do the same thing. I was like, maybe I should get a psychology degree.
Right.
Like, yeah, like I could get my master's in counseling because that would be a great idea. But I actually feel like it's not aligned with where I want to go future-wise.
Right.
But I know that reactivity to a trigger from that imposter syndrome. Right. So I don't really know like the dance. I think you're doing it like the way that you process that is so helpful for us all to listen to because I feel like we all do that in real time, feel like I'm going to take action this way. But then it's good to reassess.
Yeah.
Take a minute.
So what would you say, how would somebody able to know the difference between when they're in their true and authentic self versus when they're not? Like if someone was listening and they could kind of define, oh, I'm being my true and authentic self or like I'm really not being that.
Well, I think also feedback, like your friend at the pool challenged you, but then I'm also seeing the other side of that would be authentic to you to get your PhD. That's why it's not black and white, our decisions.
It is, yes.
So I think like for me, what was the question? How do I know?
Like how would somebody know listening whether they're in their true and authentic self or they're not?
I think a big sign for me is if something feels urgent.
Mm.
Like if I feel like I'm looking up courses.
I definitely felt that when I was looking up the programs.
Yeah, always like when I'm feeling out of alignment.
Yes.
I feel urgent. And I've even started practicing of like, if I get triggered by something, I'll be like, better book in my therapy session right now. Like, I'm like, let's take a beat.
Yes.
Take a
minute. What does it feel like to be in alignment? How would you?
The eight C's probably.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Connected, peaceful. I think there's nothing wrong with the part of you that would feel really accomplished in getting a PhD. And I think that doesn't necessarily mean ego. Right. I think that's like a sense of accomplishment, but it's that dance. And I think people throw out the baby with the bathwater so quickly.
Yes.
I think that's good. But I think what we're hitting on this kind of my final question is because I think my journey with imposter syndrome, and it pops up in weird spaces, I think, or by different personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't care if someone else like says something, but then if it's a certain personality that you want to impress, then it's like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's a real thing. But I think the big thing that I'm learning is around self-acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So accepting like where you're at rather than judging where you're at or rejecting where you're at. How would you describe self-acceptance?
I mean, Brené Brown has an incredible book on it called Braving the Wilderness. Have you read
it?
It's so good.
I actually haven't read the whole thing. Just own
it's so good. It's all about like...
I've listened to her talks on it.
Yes. So good. Yeah. Which she's very good at kind of packaging them all up. But it's all about coming home, to yourself. And I teach clients this so much because I think a lack of authenticity or being true to yourself can feel like self-abandonment and you just can't, there's not a safe place to come home to. And I think self-acceptance is recognizing all of who you are, your strengths, your weaknesses, the things you're going after, the things you feel like you might never be good at, and recognizing like, this is who I am. This is all of me. There's things that I'm great at. There's things that I'm not great at. And again, not black and white, because I think sometimes, like you said, we throw the baby out with the bathwater and then we're like, well, that's just not who I am and I'm never gonna be that. Yeah. And so then we don't try. But I think we're always evolving and we're always becoming more and more of ourselves. And I think that our self changes over time. Like not the core of who we are, but me as a mom right now with three kids is very quote unquote different than who I was 7 years ago. And there has to be permission for myself to grow and change and evolve. And
yeah.
But being able to accept and own who I am at every stage and phase, knowing my limitations, but also welcoming my strengths and the things that I'm doing well.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's
how would you
so good.
Answer that?
Yeah. I mean, I think old Ella would have thought self-acceptance was like settling or not having good standards and compromising who you are. But now I think it's like what you're saying is I don't have an inflated expectation on myself to be like this rock star all the time. So I mean, even when I coach people who become first-time parents, I notice like there's this expectation that you're going to be the same as you were when you were single and accomplish what you did when you were single. And it's like, actually, acceptance looks like accepting the season. And you're amazing at that. I mean, your whole podcast is probably around this, like really accepting. But also, I think there's something powerful in self-acceptance. You become more accepting and less judgmental of other people too.
Yeah.
I think it's like it's you're more generous towards other people. It's so good. Well, in closing, describe a moment where you felt most like yourself, because I think this helps people have vision or what's in alignment for Chantel, like what feels aligned for you. Because I think if I paint a picture of what like that looks like for people, it would help them reflect back of like, that's the same for me. Maybe that's this for me that's different. Yeah. So what feels most aligned for you?
I think if you've ever heard of the concept flow.
Yes.
By, what is his name? Mikhail
Csikszentmihalyi. It's like Russian or something.
I think it's Cree or something.
Oh, okay.
And he talks about being in a state of flow where you're doing something that, and it just feels like time just passes.
Yeah.
And you could do that thing all day long and not look at the time, and everything inside of you lights up and feels aligned and feels like it's just flowing versus when you're doing things that don't feel flowy, you can just kind of feel the discomfort or the frustration or whatever. And so I think where I feel the most aligned or the most flow is, I think, when I'm teaching about this stuff. Like when I'm teaching Thrive, I have a membership, a monthly membership called Thrive, and I've been doing it for a year now. And I teach every single Friday, and it is the place where I feel the most fired up, lit up, where I feel like what is coming out of me is the most authentic, aligned parts of me. Like I just time flies when I'm doing that. And so I think, but that is where I feel like my most authentic self now. But the very first time that I ever felt that way was actually when I was with my kid, when I first had Zion. And it would just be us alone in the apartment. He was like one. And I, because I had so much self-protection and insecurity back then, I never felt like myself unless I was with him. Because he was one and he couldn't judge me. And he thought that I was the light of his life, and he still does. And mm-hmm. it was actually a journey that I went on with my therapist at the time, where I was like, being around my one-year-old son is the place where I feel most like myself. And how can I bring pieces of that into the wow. rest of my life? Great so I think question. Finding that space where you feel most like yourself, whether that's you're kicking butt and doing an awesome thing, or you're literally being silly with your one-year-old, like find out where you feel most alive, where you feel most authentic and engaged, and find ways to bring little pieces of that into every other area of your life.
So good. Wow. I love that. I hope that gives our audience like a bit of vision for what it could look like for you. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, fam.
Yeah. So Chantel is a therapeutic life coach, and she has a podcast called Own It. And you can be a part of her Thrive membership. And we're going to put all the links to that in the comments. But thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Yay. Thanks for listening today. Please download, share with your friends, and write a review. If you would like to book in a life coaching session with me, go to my website at www.ella-hooper.com or follow me on Instagram at Next Brave Thing Podcast.